to make things worse when things are bad is you're kind of in rare company.
The oil and gas industry speaks out against Governor Walker's plan to raise minimum taxes. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, mushers move out of rural Alaska.
If I had a choice, I'd live out in the bush forever and stay off the road system, away from all the headaches, but it's more affordable and more accessible when you're on the road system.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Alaska Community Action on Toxics believes future generations have the right to clean water, clean air, and toxic-free food. Learn more by visiting akaction.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Community Action on Toxics.
Alaska Republicans will go to the polls tomorrow to select their nominee for president. In Juneau this morning, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan wouldn't tell reporters who he's voting for, but he did weigh in on a racism controversy surrounding frontrunner Donald Trump. Sullivan, in the Capitol for his annual speech to Alaska lawmakers, stressed the importance of a strong military presence in the state. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Sullivan says the Republicans have a strong field, and he says he'll support whoever the nominee is. But it sounded like Sullivan might have a tougher time if it's Trump.
I'm not saying I support everything he does. I don't support everything any candidate does. But there's certain things that are beyond the pale, right? Nobody should ever even remotely contemplate getting support from the KKK. It's outrageous. It's idiotic.
The issue arose this weekend in a CNN interview when Trump declined to disavow the endorsement of former Klan leader David Duke. Trump later blamed the network's earpiece, saying he didn't hear the question well. Sullivan, talking to reporters after his speech to the legislature, spoke up for another Republican presidential candidate. Sullivan says it's not true that Senator Ted Cruz of Texas has no friends in the Senate.
Well, it's not true from my perspective. I get along really well with Senator Cruz. I like Senator Cruz.
Cruz came to Alaska in 2014 to campaign for Sullivan. Alaska's senior senator, Lisa Murkowski, is campaigning this year. And Sullivan told reporters he endorses her reelection.
Yeah, I'm supporting Senator Murkowski. You know, I mean, she's the chairman of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. She's one of the most important, powerful people in the country on energy issues that impact our state. And I think she's doing a very good job.
It may seem like an obvious endorsement. They're both Republicans, and Murkowski helped him win his seat. But when asked a few months ago, Sullivan wouldn't directly say whether he would return the favor. And in the Senate, he has repeatedly voted to the right of her, splitting their votes on things like the budget, VA benefits for same-sex couples, and climate change. In his address to the legislature, Sullivan emphasized his efforts to build up and retain the state's military assets.
So my number one priority in the past year as your U.S. Senator has been to advocate for defense and military policies that enhance the capability of Alaska's military, Alaska's triad of military power, for our nation.
The senator says in the final year of the Obama administration, Alaskans can't expect favorable decisions on resource development.
As a matter of fact, we are likely going to be playing defense. Unfortunately, this administration, as you all know, is focused too much on locking up and controlling more of our lands, on delaying projects.
Sullivan, though, made a point of recognizing Democrats who had done right by Alaska. He talked about watching a video of three U.S. senators discussing the importance of resource development and military installations in the state.
You might think they were all members of the current Senate majority in the U.S. Senate, but they weren't. The year was 1960.
The senators were John F. Kennedy, Scoop Jackson, and Bob Bartlett, all Democrats. If that was an effort to win over Democrats among Alaska legislators, it didn't work on Representative David Guttenberg of Fairbanks.
Well, I wasn't impressed. There wasn't a lot of content. You know, we all support the military and certainly the Alaska's role in the developing Arctic.
Guttenberg says he was turned off by Sullivan's agreement with Republican leaders to hold no hearings on President Obama's Supreme Court pick, whoever it might be. And Guttenberg says he would have liked to hear Sullivan talk about the importance of funding Arctic research at the University of Alaska.
Support for the university with its vast research arm is critical to who develops the Arctic. If we don't develop the Arctic in Alaska and do the research in Alaska, then somebody else is going to do it outside, some other university.
Guttenberg says research money would add jobs to the economy and help Alaska define its future. For Alaska Public Radio Network, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The top energy industry lobbyist in Alaska denounced Governor Bill Walker's proposed oil and gas tax changes today. Alaska Oil and Gas Association President Kara Moriarty told the House Resources Committee that companies can't afford higher costs when oil prices are low.
If you want the policy of Alaska to be to raise taxes on an industry that has negative cash flow, then that's your prerogative. But what we're saying is that that policy will impact their investment and production.
Walker proposes raising the minimum oil and gas tax from 4% to 5%. He also wants to eliminate some tax credits for drilling and exploration. The changes would reduce the state government's $3.5 billion deficit by $500 million. Representative Garen Tarr, an Anchorage Democrat, asked Moriarty to reconcile industry concerns with the actions of some companies, such as Hillcorp, which gave employees $100,000 bonuses last year.
How can you expect the Alaska public to react to information like that and then, you know, respond that they think, you know, that company is hurting?
Moriarty says Hillcorp honored a long-term commitment to their workers with the bonuses. She added that other major employers have been laying off workers in Alaska. Armstrong Oil and Gas Chairman Bill Armstrong says other states have had stable oil and gas taxes, but Alaska has made several changes over the past decade, making it more difficult to invest. And he says most countries have been cutting taxes on energy companies.
They're all making things better, with the exception of three countries that I could find: Congo, Madagascar, and Tanzania, and Alaska. Three countries and a state. So to make things worse when things are bad is, you're kind of in rare company.
The committee will hear testimony from more industry executives tomorrow. A bill to give parents more authority over sex education in Alaska schools passed the Alaska Senate Friday. KDLG's Hannah Colton has more.
Senate Bill 89, introduced by Senator Mike Dunleavy last spring, is framed as a parental rights bill. It would require parents' permission before public school students have a sex ed lesson, and it would allow parents to opt their kids out of sex ed classes. But the piece that's drawn more controversy is that the measure would bar schools from using educational material from any abortion services provider. That includes Planned Parenthood, which says it currently provides education to over 2,000 Alaskan children. The bill's co-sponsor, Senator Kathy Giesel, told reporters Monday it's about protecting parents' authority over their children's education.
To have special interests coming into the schools, many parents believe is inappropriate. If they wanted their children to receive materials and philosophy from Planned Parenthood, any parent can certainly take their child to a Planned Parenthood clinic, but it doesn't belong in an institution where we're providing a broad education for all of Alaska's children.
Before the Senate vote Friday, Senate Minority Leader Berta Gardner slammed the bill, saying it would be counterproductive in a state with such high rates of chlamydia, child sex abuse, and teen pregnancy.
Many of us as parents want our children to be informed. We want them to know the scientific facts about disease, about reproduction, not just human reproduction, but all reproduction. We want children to know the facts about dating violence and risks and what are healthy relationships and what are the signs that a relationship is not healthy. I mean, that's what we want for all children, I think.
Gardner amended the bill Friday to clarify that it wouldn't prevent schools from teaching about dating violence and sexual abuse, which is required under the new Aaron's Law. And content matter aside, Gardner argued that the bill violates the autonomy of local school districts.
I believe it's state overreach, it impairs local control, and it puts a unfunded mandate on school districts. And we've kind of fought against those in other areas, too.
Senator Gardner also noted that parents can currently take their kids out of a school lesson or activity for any reason. Senate Bill 89 passed the state Senate Friday by a vote of 12-7. It now goes to the House. In a piece of companion legislation, Senator Dunleavy also spelled out penalties. Senate Bill 191 says that teachers could be fired and even have their teaching licenses revoked for using materials from an organization like Planned Parenthood. That bill is scheduled to be heard by the Senate Education Committee Tuesday. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, lightning strikes a plane on its way to Ketchikan from Seattle.
All of a sudden, there was just this boom, like a big boom, explosion-type sound, and everyone just kind of gasped on the plane. What was that?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future. And by Full Circle, delivering organic produce and artisan groceries, including Alaskan products, across Alaska. Learn about year-round delivery options at fullcircle.com/APRN.
A federal appeals court says the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service followed the law when it designated more than 187,000 square miles as critical habitat for threatened polar bears. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals today reversed a 2013 lower court decision that the designation of the coastal area larger than California was too extensive and not specific. A three-judge panel of appeals court said the Fish and Wildlife Service followed the law, and the lower court's call for more specificity in designated habitat was not required by the Endangered Species Act. Attorney Brendan Cummings of the Center for Biological Diversity hailed the decision, saying polar bears will get the full protection of the habitat they need. An Alaska Airlines flight on its way to Ketchikan and Juneau was struck by lightning last night. No one was hurt, but it shook people up. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Alaska Airlines Flight 69 left Seattle Sunday night, a little before its scheduled departure time. It was about 15 minutes into its trip to Ketchikan and Juneau. Passenger Libby Bacalar says then this happened.
All of a sudden there was just this boom, like a big boom, explosion-type sound, and everyone just kind of gasped on the plane. What was that?
It shook the plane, too, when it happened. It just sounded like a big explosion.
George Reifenstein was on the flight, too.
There was a brilliant flash, and some people who were aft of the engine saw some flame.
Both passengers say everyone went silent.
And then maybe a minute went by before the pilot got on the intercom and he said, you know, very calmly, you know, that was lightning and it happens and we have to turn around and go back to Seattle.
The plane landed and everyone got off. They were eventually loaded onto another jet for an uneventful flight north. That included a dance team from Ketchikan and passengers headed on to Sitka. Alaska Airlines' Ann Zaninovich says heading back to SeaTac wasn't a hard decision.
Since the plane had just taken off, you know, a few minutes prior, the safest thing to do would be to turn around the plane. And out of abundance of cautions for the passengers and everybody on board, turned around the plane, headed back to Seattle to inspect the aircraft.
The lightning strike was a first for the passengers we talked to, but Zaninovich says it's not rare.
It's fairly common. But we take these things seriously, and always, you know, safety is our number one priority.
Passenger Bacalar, who pens the blog One Hot Mess, says she hopes it's not all that common. Once, she says, was enough.
And there's a, you know, the expression, lightning won't strike twice in one place, I guess. So maybe the chance of me being on another flight that gets hit by lightning is low. Let's hope.
There's no official details about damage to the Boeing 737, but some passengers said they saw burn marks once they left the plane. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
To be competitive in the Iditarod, more mushers are migrating onto the road system. The sport was born on the Seward Peninsula, but with serious sled dog races getting faster and more specialized, many mushers are leaving the bush behind to train on the rail belt. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, money, climate, and convenience are pushing Alaska's state sport onto the road.
Sunlight spills between thick stands of birch trees in Nenana as Iditarod rookie Tom Jamgoshan shovels up the dog lot.
Well, I live in Nome, Alaska, and I came down here taking 3.5 months off of work to train for the Iditarod.
Jamgoshan is a lawyer for the state and, just for the record, a personal friend. Though he started his kennel in the bush, this is the second year that he's come onto the road system as part of his attempt at the Iditarod.
Snow conditions out in Nome are pretty unreliable. And it's a lot cheaper to fly out here to run qualifying races and shorter races, and heck of a lot cheaper to get food and meat.
A pallet of dog food that costs $100 delivered by road to Nenana could be up to $900 carried by barge to Nome. And not only are coastal snow conditions hard to predict, but storms often wipe out training trails overnight.
If I was doing this on my own in Nome, I'd be spending half my time on a snow machine just keeping the trails in shape.
Here in Nenana, Jamgoshan is training under conditions that allow him to maximize his time on the sled, practicing his long-distance routines. He's renting a small cabin on property owned by a top musher with long roots in competitive sled dog racing.
I'm Aaron Burmeister, of course, born and raised in Nome, Alaska, born around the Iditarod and involved in it since childhood.
The Burmeister family helped get the race off the ground in its early years, and Aaron's young son, Hunter, is being brought up close to the kennel with a hearty outdoor lifestyle. As we're talking, Hunter shows off handfuls of dry moss gathered for a bonfire later on.
Well, thank you, son. Okay, you hold on to it for me.
The sled dog racing that Hunter's learning, though, is radically different from the small teams and recreational outings that his dad grew up with in the 80s.
And as a child, my parents would throw caribou hides in the sled, throw me in my parka in a sleeping bag, and send me out on the trail in the basket with them.
The demands and expense of competitive mushing are reshaping earlier traditions. In this year's Iditarod, 52 of the entrants from Alaska list their homes as communities on the road system. Just 9 are from the bush. And even then, several are like Burmeister and Jamgoshan, who spend winters training on the roads. Burmeister still spends part of his year in Nome, but he started training in Nenana shortly after college when he began competing more seriously and needed to raise his kennel operations to the next level.
If I had a choice, I'd live out in the bush forever and stay off the road system away from all the headaches. But it's more affordable and more accessible when you're on the road system.
We're interrupted when Burmeister gets a call from another musher.
Bear with me for a second. That's Pete. Okay. Hello. How far out are you, bro?
Pete is Pete Kaiser of Bethel, who won his second consecutive Kuskokwim 300 just last month. He's trained with Burmeister the last few years and just bought property nearby. Kaiser and another musher from Aniak, Richie Deal, are approaching the kennel for a short rest in the middle of a training run and are able to check in with Burmeister by cell phone from the runners, taking advantage of the 4G network in the area, another rail belt perk. Some of the factors driving mushing onto the road system are external, increasingly variable weather and the higher cost of living in the bush. But internally, the sport is also speeding up every year, with more refined, regimented training strategies becoming commonplace. One of the reasons that large, healthy teams can make the 1,000-mile trip to Nome in less than 9 days is because of the fanatically focused dietary regimes that mushers like the Seavies, Boozers, and Burmeister feed their elite breeds.
Your typical competitive Iditarod racing dog today is burning 12 to 15,000 calories per day while they're on the trail. Now, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you could feed dogs fish and you'll be just fine. But 1 pound of fish, you're averaging 1,800 calories. 1 pound of a premium power product that is being fed today in Iditarod is 42 to 4,400 calories.
Burmeister came in third last Iditarod, but is taking this year off to spend more time with his family. He wants a first-place finish, but beyond year-to-year battles to win the race, he's invested in a longer campaign.
Yes, I'm competitive, very competitive. My goal is to win the Iditarod. But this sport wouldn't thrive, it wouldn't survive without up-and-comers like Pete and Richie and Tom and all these mushers that are getting into the sport is what keeps the sport successful. And my goal is to promote not just myself, I focus more on promoting the sport and promoting mushing.
Indy Nana, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Through generous APU scholarship packages and the new APU Promise Tuition Grant Program, APU is a sound educational investment in your future. Apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
For more than a decade, the Color of Justice program has educated students of color about legal professions and how they can give back to their communities by pursuing careers in the law. This year, for the first time, Alaska Native corporations have come together to get rural students involved. Alaska Public Media's urban affairs reporter Ann Hillman has more.
Judge Pamela Washington sits in a crowded room surrounded by youth who pepper her with questions about why she went into law.
And my employer said, you should go to law school. It was the first time I had even heard of it. And I didn't know any lawyers. I didn't have any lawyers in my family. I hadn't watched any law shows. And he said, you should go to law school. I'm like, okay.
Washington is participating in MentorJet. It's like speed dating for high schoolers to learn about jobs in the justice system. She tells the youth she wanted to help people who were in need, and this was a way to do that. That's also why she participates in the Color of Justice program.
Justice is not just done, justice is seen. And I think when people go into the courtroom and they see people that represent the face of our community, I think people feel that justice can be had there. And so sometimes people leave the court system and they don't feel that way because it's not reflective of our community.
Though the program has reached out to urban Alaskans for 13 years, it only reaches rural youth who attend Mount Edgecombe, a boarding school in Sitka. The program is held there every other year. This year, Cook Inlet Region Incorporated Vice President Bruce Anders decided to increase rural involvement in the Anchorage program.
I was concerned, and I found it a little ironic, that a program that was promoting diversity in the legal profession lacked diversity with respect to Alaska Natives and rural Alaskan students.
He worked with the other 11 regional Native corporations to fund 40 students from rural Alaska to travel to Anchorage and participate in the program. They came from villages as far-ranging as Akutan and Kaktovik. Anders says if young adults from rural areas learn about the legal system, they can return to their communities and affect change through the legislature, the justice system, and their Native corporations. That's why 10th grader Sam Shimon from Gamble is participating in the program.
Well, I feel like the views and values of a rural Alaskan are not very well portrayed in the justice system in general.
He says part of the problem is places like Gamble, located on St. Lawrence Island, are physically disconnected from the justice system, and people can't fully engage with it.
In Gamble, there's not really any lawyers there, or it's a phone court. You call in and you FaceTime a judge or you FaceTime a jury, and that's their court. And then if you get in trouble, somebody flies in from Nome, picks you up, brings you out.
He says he wants to give rural people a voice in the justice system and help them understand how it works. He also wants to influence legislation by teaching urban Alaskans about the impacts of climate change and dumping in the ocean. The two-day Color of Justice program teaches students about ways they can do those things through legal professions. It was founded by the National Association of Women Judges. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Ferrandi Carnival is celebrating its 50th anniversary. To commemorate the event, Golden Wheel Amusements, the family-owned company that runs the carnival, has introduced a new ride, the Golden Carousel. APRN intern Wesley Early has more.
50 years ago, Claire Morton came to Anchorage with her family from the Lower 48 to pick up an octopus ride for her budding carnival business.
I came up here in 1967 to purchase a ride to take it out, for a rendezvous was coming up. I stayed for rendezvous, and I've been here ever since.
Morton and her family are owners of Golden Wheel Amusements. They've been partnering with Ferrandi since they first learned about the festival. After decades of partnership, Morton says the bond is still strong between Golden Wheel and Ferrandi.
Oh, very solid. This is our 50th year. I mean, how solid does it get?
Family ownership of the company is very important to Morton. She says that she has plans for the business to pass through her family for quite a while.
2000, I turned it over to my daughter and son-in-law. Same daughter that was 1 year old when I first arrived. And, you know, now my daughter and son-in-law are teaching the grandchildren. So the third generation will be taking over in the not-too-distant future.
Morton shows me some of the newer attractions, such as the Rave, which spins fast enough to hold riders to the wall as the floor drops out. Morton also pointed out other small changes to the festival, such as a small swing set for little children.
So, and then this little swing ride for the kids, new, came in last summer.
Then, Morton shows me the Golden Carousel. She says Chelsea Eckert, her granddaughter-in-law, is in charge of the carousel's unveiling. Eckert says she thinks the ride will be a crowd pleaser.
It's great that it's our 50th for rendezvous, so right off the bat has a certain extra celebration added onto it. And I personally am a fan of the classics, so to see a new carousel on the midway just warms my heart. Who doesn't like a carousel? I think they'll love it.
Aside from the fun factor of the Golden Carousel, Golden Wheel also partnered with Providence Children's Hospital this year to make the ride a little more special for the kids. 20% of the proceeds from the ride are going back to the hospital to help both the children there as well as their families. Children gather around the carousel as 11-year-old Ashley Perry, who is a patient at Providence, cuts the glittery ribbon, signaling that the carousel is open for the kids. The Ferrandi Carnival runs until March 6th this year in downtown Anchorage. Anyone wanting to ride the carousel must be at least 42 inches tall, or be there with a parent. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Hannah Colton in Dillingham, and Zachariah Hughes, Wesley Early, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
And by
Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
The Elder Mentor Program is designed to bring the wisdom, cultural values, and resilience of Alaskan elders into the classroom and into the community by supporting educators and children. They're looking for low-income elders, age 55 or older, to serve as positive, supportive role models for children. Elder Mentors serve through the National Senior Corps Program. Mentor information at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.